Track number 26, On Leaving the City. As you leave the city, don't let yourself be carried away by nostalgia or by overexcitement, as did the tourist Pietro Aretino, who on reaching Venice on the 6th of July 1539, after a short stay in Reggio Emilia, wrote in his diary something like this: Reggio the well-to-do, Reggio the courteous, I would so like to see you again and exalt your memory. I don't know whether I'm fonder of you or of my native city of Arezzo. The air is salubrious, the land is fertile, the men are gentlemen, the women affable, and talent abounds. I know that you too, after all this walking around, will have started to get an idea of Reggio Emilia as a delightful, healthy little town, perhaps even too peaceful. Well, you'd be wrong. Here, like elsewhere, brutal crimes are sometimes committed that arouse so-called public opinion from any possible lethargy. In the past, such crimes were committed in wartime and in the wake of the war, particularly during the youth protests that, for reasons that are still unclear and which no one wants to investigate too closely, apparently gave rise to the Red Brigade terrorist group right here. A number of brutal crimes are still committed here today, and when they are, you can get glimpses of Reggio Emilia for a few seconds on national television networks that you've never seen before. I can never manage to focus properly on the close-up shots of Reggio being shown on the screen. I can never work out what area of the city they were filmed in. Obviously, Reggio Emilia appears on national television networks on other occasions too, such as the celebrations for the Italian national flag, or for important performances held at the Romolo Valli Theatre, where the tenor from Modena Luciano Pavarotti made his first appearance at a very young age. But by now I know the images associated with these events by heart. They are like postcards, worn from being seen so many times, like irritating advertisement posters. Whereas, if a brutal crime is committed, the images of Reggio Emilia broadcast on national television are always new. They seem almost sharper to me. I am not a murderer, but I can never be thankful enough to murderers for the fact that they have never committed brutal crimes at the Romolo Valli Theatre or in the Tricolor Hall. At times, you will see anonymous images of Reggio Emilia or other peaceful standard Italian cities on national television, even when brutal crimes are not committed. That's true, but without brutal crimes, it seems to me that these places of ours lose their slightly sinister charm. It is probably a matter of habit, but it so happens that I essentially live on habits, and I am strongly influenced by national television networks. More than living, I watch myself living. More than thinking, I watch my thoughts. More than feeling emotions, I register the emotions I feel. Which is why, if I happen to travel at around midday on a crowded bus full of immigrants and students and hear people talking about the brutal crime committed in Reggio Emilia a few hours earlier, I feel an embarrassing sense of satisfaction that prevents me from being suitably grieved by the event. Let me make it clear that this doesn't mean I am a murderer, nor that I approve of the wicked deeds committed by criminals and assassins, even though I have felt for a long time that being a murderer does not prevent you from being a victim, and that Reggio Emilia is a perfect place in which to commit a perfect crime. Perfect crimes are not actually the ones where there are crime instigators and murderers, but those for which a serious motive has never been found and can soon be forgotten, like the bomb that went off some time ago inside a cafe owned and patronized by people from Cutro, or a young woman who suffocated her son, a teenage boy who stabbed his girlfriend to death because she'd been unfaithful to him, a husband who suddenly shot his wife dead with a pistol during a court hearing. Devastating, outrageous acts that are out of tune with the peaceful routine of provincial life. It is as if they were being prepared in the fog and then exploded without any apparent explanations, like time bombs. And when the bombs go off, everyone in the cafes, the hypermarkets, the squares, do nothing else but talk non-stop of the brutal crime that was committed. It's as if we've been waiting for nothing else for years so that we could talk to each other about it with such excitement. It's good to have a topic of conversation to share with others, even perhaps with people we don't know. But none of us, I mean none of the people who talk about the brutal crime, has ever thought of thanking either the victim or the murderers for the huge opportunity they offer us to communicate so passionately with each other, to share our emotions, and to see our city on the national television networks at last. We talk of nothing else except for the brutal murder committed here, from the mayor to the children, from politicians to policemen, from journalists to shop assistants, from street sweepers to industrialists, from mothers to the unemployed, from pensioners to immigrants. In the local newspapers, the letters to the editor carry nothing but comments about the brutal crime. And every one of us can freely express all the opinions that spring to mind in a prime example of unbridled pseudo-democracy. A young friend of mine called Saverio, who is studying at university to become a pollster, has worked out that for a small city like ours, it takes about 2 years of talking about the brutal and unexplainable crime in order to consume, digest, assimilate, and totally expiate it, until even just talking about it becomes senseless and rhetorical, until the crime is loathed and finally removed, and one hates indistinctly both the perpetrator and the victim of the crime, as well as whoever keeps talking about it as a kind of unfortunate malign tumor that has just been removed from the sacred body of the untainted and florid citadel. That's all. Thanks for listening, and good luck.